What's going on? How are you doing today? I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. Happy Friday, everybody. I'm joined by my producer, Adam Cheek. Happy Friday, Cheek.
Happy Friday. First long sleeve, long pants day of fall.
I definitely woke up, put on a t-shirt, and then looked outside. I opened my my Juliet balcony door, and I was like, oh my God, it's freezing. I'm cold in the studio right now. I might have to put on a sweatshirt. It is officially fall, and it feels like it too, Cheek.
Yeah, normally, like, I remember a couple years ago, we had like 90 degree weather that went into October, but this year it's hit pretty quick. Hopefully it stays.
Yeah. No, we got a lot to get to on the show today. We'll hop around college football programs in the state of Virginia with University Drive at 2 p.m. Ted Alexander, the voice of the Monarchs, will join me, as well as Mike Barber, who covers the ACC for the Richmond Times-Dispatch. We'll preview JMU and ODU's weekend's matchups as well. I'll give you, my Commanders' keys to victory at 1 p.m. on the Richmond Commander. And, of course, we're going to splash some cash on FanDuel with promo code AWOD and place some of our bets for Sunday's best bets coming up on the show today. Mark Tyler, who is a Commanders superfan from Hogs Haven, will join the show at 2:15, as well as Chris Stone from Ref the District at 12:30. But every day we like to start the show with the sports app.
Here it is, everybody.
All right, let's get started in pro tennis. Roger Federer is going to play his last pro match today. I said earlier this week he announced his retirement, so it'll be a competitive doubles match at the Laver Cup in London, where he will actually team up with his longtime rival, Rafa Nadal. Even if Federer wins, though, he won't play on Sunday. This is it. But I did want to just give Federer a shout-out on the sports app because he's one of the greatest tennis players I ever watched growing up. You know, I'll tell you, Cheek, when I started getting into tennis, Pete Sampras was the god, right? He was so good. It just felt like he made it seem easy. You know, he was destroying Agassi and Patrick Rafter and Leighton Hewitt, all these tremendous players, and he would make it look easy. And then came Roger Federer. And he did everything Pete Sampras did, but took it up in even bigger notch, right? He would finish these matches in 3 hours and look like he's not even sweating. Like, not even an ounce of sweat. The calmest face on the court. Just the ultimate professional. Such a gentleman. And the reason I loved watching him play so much is because he was perfection on the tennis court. Literally, tennis is all about making the other guy run. And that's what Roger Federer would do. After every first serve, right, he would get to the middle of the court and just control every point. Similar to what Serena was doing in the U.S. Open and what made her successful in this final run here before she finally lost. And when you're controlling the point and dominating which side of the court the ball is going to, it's so hard to defend you. So I mentioned Pete Sampras. I want to play the audio for you guys of Pete, Pistol Pete, wishing Roger Federer good luck in his retirement.
When I first played you, you were 19 years old, an up-and-coming player. People were talking about you. And we had a great battle on the center court at Wimbledon. And you took me down, tough five-setter. And I just remember walking off the court feeling like I met my match. Truly a special player. You know, little did I know 20 years later that you would have 20 majors, been number one for years, dominate our sport, basically do it all. And I know through those 20 years that you sacrificed, you dedicated yourself, you got your body right. I don't think people saw that side of you because you made the game look so easy. But I know you're the ultimate professional when it comes to preparing. Pretty extraordinary what you've done.
So in 2009, Federer won his 15th Grand Slam victory at Wimbledon, thus passing Pete Sampras, his all-time record for most singles titles. Then he won his 20th Grand Slam in 2018 at the Australian Open, where he defeated Marin Cilic, who's actually still playing tennis today as well. I get it. Both of those records have now been passed by Nadal and Djokovic, but he was the first one to do it. He was also the oldest men's title champion at Wimbledon. His last Wimbledon tournament came in 2017. The victory made him the oldest man to win the title at the age of 35 years old. At 36, he became the second oldest man to win a Grand Slam, winning the Australian Open. Then the second oldest male tennis player to win a Grand Slam in the Open era. Federer was 36 and 173 years old, or 73 days old, when he won the Australian Open in 2018. He's the only player to win two Grand Slams in five consecutive times. Two Grand Slams, five consecutive times. He never won the U.S. Open title after 2008, but he just kept winning Wimbledon on the Australian Open. Federer is the only player to reach 10 consecutive Grand Slam finals in the men's singles tournaments. He did that from 2005 to 2007. He's also the first player in tennis history to have reached all four Grand Slams in two consecutive calendar years, doing that in 2006 and in 2007. He's the only male tennis player to have played seven consecutive Wimbledon finals from 2003 to 2009. He's the only male player to reach the finals of the French Open, Wimbledon, and the U.S. in the same year on four consecutive occasions from 06 to 09. He is the only male player to be seeded number one in 18 consecutive Grand Slam tournaments. That's the record that stands out to me, Cheek. We talk about how great Federer was and the championships, but it was so many years in a row he was number one in tennis. You know, he was the face of tennis. Basically, it was like, remember Tiger Woods was the face of golf? Right? And then it was like Rory McIlroy and all these younger guys, and yet Roger Federer was still the face of tennis. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? It just lasted for multiple generations. The most consecutive weeks in tennis history as the world number one ranked tennis player. He spent 237 consecutive weeks as the number one tennis player in the world from 04 to 08, and that record still stands today. He's the oldest male tennis player to become world number one, and I could go on and on here with the rest of his accomplishments. It's so incredible. Wanted to give him that full shout out on the Sports app. Cheek, let's go over to the NBA. Ime Udoka. So we announced yesterday, and it did come true, everything we talked about. He is suspended by the Celtics for the entire 2022-23 season. What does this mean for the Celtics' title odds? Well, according to Action Network, the market remains all over the place on Boston's futures, and the win total of 54.5 has not been adjusted, and the futures to win the title at plus 550 has not been adjusted as well. So we'll see what happens over the next few weeks here. Obviously, they're going to be without their head coach now next season. You're going to be without starting center Robert Williams, who is expected to miss at least the first month of the season. They brought in Danilo Gallinari, who had season-ending injury over the summer as well. So it just feels like it's going to be a up-in-the-air season for the Celtics. I would not put money on them to be as good as they were last season. I mean, they overachieved making it to the NBA Finals. Kawhi Leonard is fully cleared for the Clippers for training camp after the ACL injury. They said they want to take it step-by-step, though. Clippers president Lawrence Frank said he feels great. His plan is, look, he wants to participate in everything. And I think in this organization, we're going to be cautious, so it will be a step-by-step approach. Remember, Kawhi Leonard didn't play at all for the Clippers last season. The 31-year-old in his last season played, averaged 25.6 rebounds, 5.2 assists. The highlight of his career, of course, winning the title with the Toronto Raptors. John Wall spoke out on the Players Tribune. So Chase Hughes will join the show at 12:45 to discuss this further. But John Wall said, quote, "I was this close to taking my own life. It happened in a span of 3 years. He went from on top of the world to damn near losing everything he cared about." And so it's such a sad story. Cheek, did you have a chance to read it yet?
I haven't had a chance to read it yet, no.
Yeah. I want to get into it later on in the show. I love John Wall, obviously, so much from his time here in Washington, and I'm really looking forward to him teaming up with Kawhi Leonard and the rest of the LA Clippers. Let's move over to the MLB. All right, so I want to do a bit on the show today, Cheek. Let's text Ryan Brown, who is a known New York Mets superfan, right? What's his Twitter account now? Like Mets Rebo?
Playoff Mets Rebo.
Playoff Mets Rebo, all right. Well, the New York Mets set a major league record with 106 hit batters this season when Mark Canha was plunked twice on Wednesday's 6-0 loss to the Milwaukee Brewers. And so maybe we can, to celebrate that, right, the Mets setting a major league record, we can line them up, right, and just have everybody. We'll bring in Parney, right? We'll bring in Purcell from the sales staff and Kent and even Greg, right, our promotions, our program director, and just have everybody throw a baseball at him to celebrate the Mets getting plunked more than anybody in Major League history.
We may be sued.
Well, I think Ryan could take a couple balls. The Squirrels last night, we did want to mention that. Cheek, you were at the game, so was I.
Yeah.
Let's just start with the environment, though. It did feel like a playoff game. I was, of course, broadcasting live there from 12 to 3, went home, took a nap, and then I got back there for first pitch. And it just, the first inning was not the greatest inning.
It wasn't. I will give credit, your time of the atmosphere. And, like, every strike, people were cheering.
Yeah.
It was great. Like,
oh, dude,
you don't
the two
see
home
that.
Runs where we tied the game.
Back-to-back, yeah.
People went, back-to-back homers. People went absolutely bananas in the AWOD and Friends Stone Brewing tent section.
Yeah.
I spilled my beer all over myself. That's how much I was celebrating. It felt like the momentum swung when we tied it 2-2. And then the following inning, Cheek, we had guys on first and second. And I don't know what happened. Do you? So I think they called runner interference or something.
I think they said the infielder.
It was a BS call by the
umps. Was on the bag. There were some questionable calls, whether it was ball strikes and all that stuff. But you were talking about when the back-to-back homers happened. That was Ricardo Genovese and Carter Aldretti. And I was up in the broadcast booth. Trey Wilson, Blaine McCormick, who we had on yesterday, were up there. Trey's girlfriend was also up there. And Trey was calling, and Blaine had just walked back in. And the three of us were kind of in the back, and like that happened as Blaine walked in, and like he and I just like grabbed each other, we're like, oh my god, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Disappointing end of the season, but we both went on one of the other radio stations here at Odyssey.
Yeah, Cat Simons on 98. Yeah,
and so you'll be able to hear us breaking down the Squirrels game last night. But what we both said was, the outcome of the game sucks, but the Squirrels leading all of minor league baseball in attendance proves how much this team means to Richmond.
Great season. There's so many talented players. So fun to watch. So much fun working with them all year. And I really can't wait for next season.
Absolutely. Man, we got so much more to get to on the sports app. We might have to do it again later on in the show. Still talk about Aaron Judge, the Nats with Josiah Gray on the mound, the college football last night. Not a great one for Virginia Tech. They lose to West Virginia. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio on The Fan. Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM. A lot still to get to on the show today. We'll give you a full preview of the Commanders as they face off against the Philadelphia Eagles. And Matthew Paris, who usually joins the show, what, was he on yesterday, Cheek? I think he was.
He was.
From the Washington Times. He wrote a really interesting article about the Philadelphia fan base bringing 20 different buses, over 1,500 people. The Philly fans are expecting FedEx to be rocking and rolling every time Jalen Hurts gets into the end zone. I'm not happy about that, but at the same time, I'm okay with Commanders fans just saying, hey, screw Dan Snyder. We're not going to the game. You know, we'll go to Home Team Grill. We'll go to River City Roll. We'll go to One Iron and watch the game. Or just, you know, stay home at your house and have as many beers and wings as you want, rather than drive all the way to FedEx Field and pay for parking and tickets and watch us lose a game while you're, you know, leaky pipes are spilling sewage water on you. It's not fun. So we'll get to that later on in the show. But yesterday, Cheek, so we did that story about Tom Hardy, right? Great actor.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite Tom Hardy movie?
It's got to be Fury Road.
Mad Max 100%, Fury Road.
That movie's a masterpiece.
So The Legend, I think it is. He did a movie, I believe, for Showtime.
Legend. Yeah, I kept meaning to get around to that.
So he plays himself and his twin brother.
Yep.
It's not the greatest movie. That's his best role as an actor, because I don't know how he's able to play the exact same guy, basically, but a twin with a completely, like, a different style of talking, a different style of acting. He just feels like a different person. Yeah, when he just changes his hairstyle in that movie.
I mean, he's great in Inception. He's great in The Revenant.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah. He's just Locke a great character actor, right? Yeah. I loved him in Mad Max, like you said. But Tom Hardy, the actor, turned jiu-jitsu master. He entered and won a jiu-jitsu competition in Brazil, right? So we talked about that yesterday. What we didn't mention is who he defeated in the finals, Cheek. Mark Zuckerberg. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It was Zuckerberg wasn't in Brazil. But Mark Zuckerberg has taken up MMA training and jiu-jitsu, and the quote from the New York Post is, "This nerd is a silent killer."
Oh, no.
You know how embarrassing it is for me that Mark Zuckerberg would beat my ass in a fight? That nerd-ass loser who created Facebook, like, he's literally the biggest nerd on the planet right now. And remember when he was in court testifying and he had all these memes and he's the king of the memes and everyone making fun of him for being pale and skinny and an out-of-shape loser? Well, that guy is a quote-unquote silent killer now. Are you kidding me? Cheek, I need to start training.
I need to start training. Possible.
My goodness. The article went on to say that Meta Boss, all right, I forgot that Facebook is now Meta. I still don't even understand the metaverse. Do you, Cheek?
No.
Are you on there?
I mean, I'm on Facebook, but I'm not.
It's probably a better chance I get a girlfriend on the metaverse than in real life. But Meta boss Mark Zuckerberg and a growing number of other Silicon Valley executives are taking their minds off of the current tech sector slump by hitting the gym for mixed martial arts training, according to reports. Tech workers like Zuckerberg are now regulars at MMA gyms. According to the information here, they said he's never like that. Don't do that. He's actually like, can you give me a little more resistance, a little more force? I want to feel it. Wow. So he actually likes the training. Zuckerberg is 39 years old now, and he's participated in a bunch of different private training sessions, and he teams up with other CEOs, like the CEO of PayPal, Dan Schulman, and they train in Krav Maga and Jiu-Jitsu and Aikido and all these other crazy forms of training.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like the idea that Mark Zuckerberg could beat me in a fight. I don't like that.
That's what I don't like at all, Ethan.
That makes me uncomfortable.
It just makes me feel like less of a man. It really does. Like, are you kidding me? Zuck the blank, right? It's just so funny. The article just goes on to say how great it is. Everyone's happy to see him. They call it the jiu-jitsu nerds. And they say after an hour or two, this was Zuckerberg saying, after an hour or two of working out or rolling or wrestling with friends, that sounds a little sketchy, wrestling with friends on training day with different folks, now I'm ready to solve whatever problem at work for the day. So he gets up, goes and starts training, and then he goes to Meta, and you know his thing at Meta is, no working from home, right? You better be here! And then there was the other story about Meta, remember? He wants like 12-hour days. You know, him and Elon Musk and all these, everyone in Silicon Valley and Apple and Google, they do all these things here where they like create extra reasons for you to stay at work, right? They have a cafe there so you can have lunch and work through your lunch. They have, you know, pods for you to take naps and stuff. And now they have MMA gyms, right? So you can get your training in. My goodness.
The frustration of working for them, maybe.
This nerd is a silent killer. This article is a silent killer. It's killing all of my confidence now that I know that Zuckerberg is better than me at MMA. I might have to do... Are there any MMA training gyms or facilities here in Richmond?
Good question.
Call us. 833-804-0910. 833-804-0910. Or tweet me at AWOD Radio. Cheek, so the queen passed away, what was it, a week and a half ago, and then the funeral was Monday. Do you know that our guy in the mornings on WRVA went to England?
Yeah, John went to London, yeah.
Yeah. When I heard that story, I was like, are you kidding? That dude is dedicated to the craft. My goodness. I heard he did the show there, and then the next day he flew and did the next show from Reykjavik. Yeah. Where is that even?
Iceland.
That's in Iceland? Yeah. So he stopped in Iceland for a morning? My goodness.
Yep.
That's why WRVA gets better ratings than I do. He's traveling to see the queen at her funeral.
I'll give him credit, yeah.
But interestingly enough, I saw an article, Cheek, and you'll relate to this, I hope, like I did. The queen apparently had a video game obsession. Did you know this?
No, I didn't.
She had a secret obsession with video games, and she in fact had a gold-plated Nintendo Switch.
Huh.
Who knew the queen had a Mario Kart obsession? Right? Watch out. You give her Zelda, she'll beat your ass in Smash Bros.
I know she was, like, surprisingly a big Twin Peaks fan, too. She was? So it's like, she's all over the place. That's
We're really
that's
finding
wild.
Out she was a lot cooler than I thought she was. Man, I kind of miss her now.
She turned down a private birthday performance from Paul McCartney to watch Twin Peaks.
Really?
Yes.
Man, I love Paul McCartney.
I do, too.
Yeah, I saw something on
I grew up on the Beatles and him.
Paul McCartney was tweeting about William Shatner being on the Masked Singer or Masked Dancer and something like that. Does anyone actually watch those shows?
Not
honestly,
that I know of.
I want you to call in right now if you even watch cable television anymore. Like, I'm talking about like 8 p.m. Now, on Wednesdays, I watch Survivor, so I do watch that, but that's only one day a week. I've never watched Abbott Elementary School, which everyone's talking about on cable now, right?
I'll watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia when that's new. I keep meaning to watch the new season of Atlanta.
But It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That's FX, though. That's not like... I'm talking about, like, who's watching ABC, CBS, Fox,
outside of sports broadcasts, I don't.
Right. But they still do program every single night, and you know a few of them have even stopped doing the 10 p.m. shows and just punted 10 p.m. for infomercials. They're like, dude, we're not getting ratings. Let's just throw on, you know, Mr. Clean or something like that.
I remember when the Masked Singer happened, I was like, that's not gonna last. And then it came, then like the Masked Dancer was the thing, and then I Can See Your Voice. I'm like, why?
It lasts because of social media. Yeah. Right? Because the whole thing is they're teasing you. Who's behind the mask? Who's behind the mask? And you're waiting till literally 8:58 to find out who's behind the mask. And at that time, you've watched 58 minutes of their terrible programming.
And I don't watch it, and I just, like, sometimes I come across, oh, so-and-so was the reveal of this episode. I'm like, oh, okay, and then I move on.
Yeah. No, I know. My dad loves cable television. He's not watching The Masked Dancer or The Masked Singer or any of that stuff. I want to hear from you guys if you're actually watching cable television. 833-804-0910. You're listening to Adam Epstein here on the new Sports Radio 910, The Fan, Nat 105, 1 FM, AWOD Radio on a Friday. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. How are you doing today? Happy Friday, everybody. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910, The Fan, now at 105, 1 FM. Still to come on the show, we'll go around the NFL and pick some winners for this Sunday's slate. We'll also do a little recap from last night's Thursday Night Football, and I want to touch on Virginia Tech and their loss to West Virginia. We've got the hit segment here in the state of Virginia for college football. It's University Drive at 2 p.m. Mike Barber and Ted Alexander will join for that one. And Frank Maloney will join us to preview UVA at Syracuse at 1:30 on the show today. But right now, here on AWOD Radio, joining me on the Hadid Mercer Rug Cleaning Hotline is my guy Chris Stone, Stoner from the Ref the District podcast. What's going on, buddy?
What's up, AWOD? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good, man, and it's a football Friday here, and Let's just start with this for this matchup against the Eagles. It feels like we have nothing to lose. Let's go for it all. What's your take?
Yeah, why not go for it all? You absolutely have nothing to lose. Everybody in the country, every pundit, every social media site, every radio station has the Eagles absolutely pummeling Washington.
Yeah.
And usually when that happens, the opposite ends up happening in the end. So I think you just kind of throw caution to the wind and just go for it and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, you could take the division with a win and a Giants loss, and all of a sudden it feels like the season's turned around again. I say, why not go deep often? Why not fake a punt or something crazy? I don't think we're beating the Eagles in a shootout, and I don't think we're beating them in a low-scoring run fest. I think we're beating them if we win the turnover battle or by having more explosive momentum-shifting plays. So I feel like we really got to just go for it, and I'm talking about, like, third and one, take a deep shot, you know? Let's fake a punt. Let's fake a field goal. Let's do an onside kick or something. I don't think we're beating the Eagles if we just play this like a normal game.
Well, I think what we're getting a little bit carried away with is the whole issue getting behind in that game against Detroit was the lack of offense in the first half.
Yeah.
Right? It was drive after drive after drive. It was three and out, three and out, three and out, two and out, three and out, three and out. And that kept putting the defense back on the field. So if Carson Wentz and this offense can just put together a couple of drives in that first half, they don't even need to, say, dominate and have big plays and all that. But if they can just keep the defense, their own defense, off the field and stay rested, then that's going to help in the second half when they're going to have to probably play a little bit more with that Eagles offense. But let's not get carried away. This offense for Washington can make a huge difference and help the defense to stay off the field and not have to make so many plays.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you totally need complimentary football. You mentioned the three and outs, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, if this can't get any worse. And then you legit had a two and out with the safety, so it did get worse. Joined by Stoner from Ref the District podcast on the Hadid Mercer Rug Cleaning Hotline. Let me see, have you seen any bright spots on the defense, though? Anything that'll give you hope that we can stop the Eagles?
Well, I mean, think about that. There were two plays, well, in the first half, from the defense that got them behind the eight ball, which was the 50-yard run by DeAndre Swift and the 58-yard catch by Amon-Ra St. Brown. Other than that, the entire defense gave up 150 yards in the first half, and that's it. So after they gave up the long play to St. Brown, it was three and out, and they kicked the field goal. Then the next time when DeAndre Swift had that long run on first down, it was four and out. They kept them out of the end zone. Then the next time they had the ball, Detroit only had to go 31 yards because of that punt return or that free kick return. So they only had to be out there for 31 yards, and they got into the end zone. And then the next time, it was three and out. And then the time after that, they had one play. They had one first down, and the defense stopped them. So the narrative of this defense just being absolutely terrible is not necessarily true. Sure, you got to count those big plays that Detroit had. But if you take out those big plays, the defense actually played fairly well.
Chris, I'm going to be honest with you here. I'm going to need Ron Rivera to fire the analytics guy. I need the analytics guy to watch this game Sunday at FedEx Field from the stands. Yeah. Do not let him stand next to you and tell you the math's this, the math is that. Do not go for two, Ron. I think Ron Rivera's time management decisions and fourth down decisions are going to be very important this Sunday, and that's my opinion. What do you think, man?
Well, it's crazy that for years, while he's been in these press conferences and they ask him about analytics and he kind of pushes analytics aside and says, this is not my thing. I don't really do analytics. We have analytics, but it comes down to my gut, and that's when I make these decisions. And then when he makes a really odd analytical decision to go for two down eight in the fourth, early in the fourth quarter, then all of a sudden he just wants to say, it's math. You guys should be happy about that. Let's move on. So it's a little bit crazy. He's a little wishy-washy, but analytics has a place in this game. But I can't for the life of me, even after asking a lot of people about it, I can't figure out why you would go for two when you're down eight, right? Because if you're down 14-3 in the first quarter and you score a touchdown to make it 14-9, who goes for two? Nobody ever goes for two. Or 17-3, sorry, and you cut it to 17-9. Nobody goes for two. You kick the extra point and move on. That's football. We got to get away from all these analytics. I'm an old guy, so that's what I think.
No, it was the dumbest decision that Ron Rivera's ever made. I can't believe he did it. I honestly rewatched the game. And I thought it was like a glitch on my TV. It does not make any sense. 100 times out of 100 times, I kept saying, you kick the extra point. Screw the analytics. You're trailing the entire game. You were down 22-0.
Absolutely. And we, in our podcast, you know, we live stream the games on Ref the District. And when that happened, we were absolutely incredulous and started yelling at the screen. And probably for the first time in the history of our show, an F-bomb was dropped, and because we were just so incredulous about what was going on, going for two down eight. Just doesn't make sense. Still doesn't.
Still doesn't. Chris Stone joins us on the Hadid Mercer Rug Cleaning Hotline. Follow him on Twitter at RTDTheStone. I feel like Scott Turner has to plan better for the opening drive so that we don't go three and out. And part of that is, like, he scripts the opening drive, and it felt like he was trying to take a deep shot or he was trying to force it downfield. And then his big thing is on second down, no matter what, on the opening drive, they're going to run the ball. And it just felt like, if, at least for the first couple possessions, we were setting ourselves up with these third and impossibles, right? And where Carson's got to, like, have time in the pocket, which, hello, he didn't have the entire first half. You know, I mean, Hawk. What is that guy's? Hutchinson was all over him, and he's not even that good, right? We just made him look unbelievable. So, in your opinion, what can Scott Turner plan better so that the offense has more success in the opening of drive of the game? Because that was key. That's the reason we beat the Jags. We were up 14-0 in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, I think Scott Turner loves that whole let's script out the first 15 plays and we're going to run them no matter what. And they were obviously not working in that first quarter. Detroit was bringing so much pressure. There were times where they had 9 guys in the box. There was one play they had 8 guys blitzing, but there was no hot read and there was no changing of the play at the line. They just went with it. So when 8 guys blitz, and Carson Wentz literally had 0 seconds to make a decision, his 3 receivers were all way downfield, and he had no shot. So Scott Turner's got to take those 15 plays, and if after the first, say, 9 plays in the first 3 drives, nothing's working because of their given pressure, you got to crumple up that play sheet, throw it off to that 15-play scripted sheet, throw it off to the side, and make adjustments. They made those adjustments way too late. But when they did, you saw what happened in the second half. They were fantastic offensively in the second half, and it would have been a totally different game if he had made those adjustments in the first half.
Joined by Stoner from Ref the District podcast on the Hadid Mercer Rug Cleaning Hotline. Follow him on Twitter at RTDTheStone. All right, so the entire country is betting against us. Everyone's all in on the Eagles, saying they look like a Super Bowl team. But I will say, if there's any team that's going to stop the Eagles when they're hot, it's Washington. We might even need to suit up Ryan Kerrigan, right? He's the Eagles killer. But also, Terry McLaurin's been an Eagles killer so far through his career. So I think my keys to victory are stop Jalen Hurts early in the game, all right? Force a punt on the first couple drives there and use your offensive weapons to your advantage. Take a couple deep shots. Get Jahan Dotson one-on-one. Get Terry McLaurin one-on-one. I think if Washington scores first, they've got a good shot in this game here. If the Eagles score first, I think it's going to be a bloodbath. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's fair because when Washington's offense is out on the field, sure, Philadelphia has the number one ranked offense in the league. Well, the number 6 ranked offense in the league is the Washington Commanders. And so if they can do what they need to do, like you said, get off to a good start. So let's say Darius Slay shuts down Terry McLaurin. And let's say another guy shuts down Jahan Dotson. Well, you still got Curtis Samuel. You still got Logan Thomas. You still got McKissick. You still got Antonio Gibson. So this offense, Washington's offense, theoretically cannot be shut down completely unless they shut themselves down, like we talked about with Scott Turner in the first half against Detroit. So get off to that good lead, like you're saying, put more pressure on Philadelphia. You're going to have the home field advantage, but you're going to have not the Philadelphia home field advantage, if you will. And so you're going to have the crowd behind you if you start playing well. So put the pressure on Philadelphia early and see what happens.
Matthew Parrish just tweeted that Ron Rivera told the media members with a big smile when asked about getting Cam Curl back. He said, quote, "It gets us back to the original Buffalo we had going into this season." He loves that Buffalo nickel. I think Cam Curl is going to be a big factor, but also I want Derek Forrest to get on the field also. Bobby McCain's been the guy that's been questionable, and also William Jackson III, who can't stand on 2 feet when he's guarding Amon-Ra St. Brown. So frustrating, man.
Cam Curl is a difference maker, okay? And that could be something that changes the outcome or the ability of this defense to make stops. He is a difference maker, and not having him out there for the first 2 weeks was huge, and it showed in the results of that pass defense for the first 2 weeks. So, yeah, having him back is a monster. They may have the 3 safeties out there. They may have the 2 corners and 2 safeties with Curl and McCain, Curl and Forrest, all of those things. There are going to be adjustments that this defense is going to make. I am actually on the side that the defense is going to play much better. The offense is going to do what the offense has done the first 2 games, and I think it's going to be a lot closer than most people are predicting in the end.
All right, Stone Dog, hail to the Commanders. Thanks, man.
Yes, sir. Let's make it happen this weekend. And AWOT, I didn't get to say it last week, or the last time you had me on, but you know, I've been following you since you were a video producer with the Junkies in DC, and the strides that you're making, the big steps that you're taking, they're pretty impressive, my boy. So keep it up.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for the time. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM. Happy Friday to everybody listening in right now. We just tweeted it out at 910 The Fan. Score predictions for Commanders as they host the Philadelphia Eagles. 833-804-0910. The Richmond Commander every day here on AWOD Radio at 1 p.m. Set your alarms. Call in. Be the quarterback of that segment at 1 p.m. every day for the Richmond Commander. But right now, let's do a little I-95 at 45. Five stories about the teams we care about most along Interstate 95.
All systems go. Join us as we drive along Interstate 95 and cover the teams we care about most. Time for I-95 at 45.
All right, and joining us for this segment here on the Hadid Mercer Rug Cleaning Hotline is Chase Hughes from NBC Sports Washington. You can follow him now on Instagram at ChaseDCSports. What's going on, Chase?
Not much, just happy and appreciative for the plug, man. It's great to be on with you.
So you posted here that Carson Wentz is the first quarterback since 1950 to throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns in his first two starts with a team. So let's start in Washington with the Eagles. What are your thoughts about this matchup here? It just seems like one of these games here where our defense is going to struggle. We're going to have to score more points than them if we're going to win, obviously. But I need Carson Wentz to start hot. He's got to, you know, I think up 14-0 was the number one reason we beat the Jags. Down 22-0, the number one reason we lost to the Lions.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough matchup for sure. And you mentioned that Carson Wentz stat. The offense looks pretty good. Now, I think more consistency would be nice. They haven't been able to put together a full four quarters yet. But Carson Wentz, the early signs are encouraging, particularly when it comes to the pass-catching weapons. I was a little skeptical. Everyone was like, yeah, this offense has a pretty high ceiling. And I was like, well, we'll see. Jahan Dotson hasn't played yet, and Curtis Samuel basically didn't play at all last year due to injury. But both those guys have made a huge impact. So I'm not too worried about the offense going to this matchup, even though Philly's defense is really good. But obviously it's going to be a really difficult test for Washington's defense, which – all the first-round picks they've spent on that side of the field, it's just not coming together, even with Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio and their impressive history coaching NFL defenses.
Let's go over to Washington for the Nationals here as we drive down Interstate 95. Chase, I saw you post here about some of the great places to eat around Nats Park. I'm going to send it to my dad, who's actually going to a game next weekend for our last homestand. But the reason I brought up the Nationals, though, is I just wanted to sneak in a baseball question with you and get your take on Aaron Judge right now, because my opinion is he's chasing Barry Bonds, because although he cheated, everyone was cheating during the steroids era, and you're around the same age as me. In 2001, when Bonds hit 73, that was the first time in my life that it was like, wow, baseball is like a must-watch sport right now. You have to watch every at-bat for Barry Bonds. Or you could be on the other side that say, no, Roger Maris is the real record because he wasn't cheating. What's your thoughts on Aaron Judge, and do you think he will eventually break 61 or 62?
Well, it's regardless still a very special moment in sports, and one that I hope I get to catch. I guess the game is on Apple TV, and
yeah.
There's some questions about, for a lot of people, how they can watch. but I'm going to be tuning in. I'm hoping that he makes history, at least whether it's Yankees history or MLB history, however people view it. I personally do see the record as Barry Bonds. I'm conflicted about it. I don't feel 100% great about the fact that he holds it. I think he should go into the Hall of Fame, even though I don't feel 100% great about that either. But the record is the record. So, you know, it was done over 162 games. It wasn't, you know, a matter of him only playing 154 like baseball used to. So I think that's the record. But regardless, setting a Yankees record, I mean, I know their fans are obnoxious and we think the history is overblown, but it is the most decorated team probably in all of sports. So any record that is a Yankees record is extremely special.
Joined by Chase Hughes on the Hadid Mercer Rug Cleaning Hotline, let's head out to Capital One for the Washington Wizards. So they announced that Kyle Kuzma, pink sweater bobblehead, is set to be given away this season. They should throw away all those bobbleheads. Why are we promoting that ugly pink sweater? Chase, I want to get your take on that bobblehead. Will you be trying to collect it? And then also, I saw the NBA announced like the top 100 players, and Beal was in like the top 30, and then I think Kristaps was 88. It feels like they're giving no respect to some of the other key role players we have.
Yeah, first on the bobblehead, I disagree, man. I think it's cool. I remember like when the Nationals did the Juan Soto Soto shuffle bobblehead. I like when it's a little bit different from the just, you know, guy holding a bat or guy holding the ball in his jersey. So that was a very memorable moment, him walking in, you know, down the halls of Capital One Arena in that that sweater. I hope that it's not a bobblehead, but it's a bobble arms. I hope the arms kind of swing just like they did when he was walking down the hallway. That would be the best way to do it, but we'll see when it comes out in December.
Arms, if the arms are swinging, I want it.
As far as the top 100 players go, yeah, that list was released by ESPN, and Bradley Beal was 19th, and Kristaps Porzingis was in the top 90, as you mentioned. I think he was 86. So only two players for the Wizards in the top 100. I think Kyle Kuzma actually had a pretty good case to be, you know, in the 90s, and maybe I would have put Porzingis a little bit higher. For instance, you know, Caris LeVert was like five spots ahead. I'd rather have Kristaps Porzingis than him. And Bogdan Bogdanovic was number 100, so that's the cutoff if you're trying to consider where Kyle Kuzma would be. Obviously, these lists shouldn't be taken as gospel, but it gives you an idea of where the Wizards' talent stacks up against the rest of the league, and they have two top 100 players based on ESPN's experts.
Chase, we're having some fun here, but we got to get to some serious news. That was John Wall, and he wrote a really, really deep article for the Players Tribune. I love everything the Players Tribune does, letting the players come out and speak. And I want to read to you one of the quotes, or read to the audience one of the quotes here. Someone asked John, "Bro, how the hell can you have all that money and be depressed? You're John Wall." He said, "Listen, I know exactly who I am. I'm a dog. I've been knocked down, and I got up again," like the song, right? The canvas 100 times. From a skinny little kid growing up in Section 8 in Raleigh to the number one pick, all the ups and downs, all the blank I've seen, I know exactly who I am and what I represent and how many people need to hear this. So I'm not afraid to tell you that I've been in a place that was so dark that suicide felt like the only option. Yo, I need some effing help. Those six words changed my life. Money and fame don't mean blank if you don't have peace in your life. Chase, what were your thoughts on the interesting deep article there from John Wall?
Unbelievably powerful. First of all, gratitude that he walked away from that ledge, you know, and was able to kind of see the light and get back on the right track, you know, with young sons, and obviously a lot to live for, a lot of life ahead of him. And to share his story, just so meaningful, and I would imagine it's helpful to a lot of people out there who are struggling themselves. I mean, I've been around John Wall. I covered him for years when he was with the Wizards. Outwardly, just a very, very strong-minded person, has overcome so much, like you mentioned. And for someone who, you know, at his peak powers was a superhero for so many NBA fans, particularly young NBA fans and people who just follow the game and have followed him since he was a high school star through Kentucky, through number one pick, winning the dunk contest, becoming an NBA All-Star. I would imagine it struck a lot of people as very, you know, moving to hear a player and an athlete who has accomplished so much to share those types of feelings. If he can do that, then anyone can.
Yeah, I know everyone's going to be rooting for John Wall. That's Chase Hughes. Follow him on Instagram, Chase DC Sports.
That's right.
Chase, thanks so much, man. I appreciate your time as always.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.
Yep. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM.